Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 85. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and joining me on this Tuesday with David Todd out of town flying, I think he's flying back from New York today, is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Tuesday. How are you? Good morning and all that good stuff.
Yeah, oh, happy that you're back. You had some fun traveling, didn't you, Dave?
Oh, Lord, not. I mean, I could write probably two separate books about my time away, and one just solely on the travel, and another on my stay with my mother for
I think for the travel, if it was an audiobook, it'd just be a half hour of you screaming into a microphone.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of expletives. I'd have to have an R rating on that. Well, really, the same could go about to stay on my mother as well, too.
Well, I didn't want to say anything out of turn.
Oh, Lord. You know the old saying, there's no place like home. I could not wait to get back home. You know, we got the major business, you know, taken care of. It took about, 4 hours in one day with a lawyer that we had to get done, but outside of that, like I said, I'm not going to get into it on the show. Maybe one day in one of my poorly written memoirs, I'll go over that. But needless to say, I'm glad to be back doing what I like to do best, and that's writing and talking about football, and particularly the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you handled the site and did a great job while I was gone. You and Matthew Marksey both, along with several of our contributors, getting those draft profiles up. Really, not a lot of I guess good for us or good for me and you or whatever, not a lot of real breaking news to kind of recap. I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me first and foremost, and really I tweeted this out right before I left out of town, being as how there was a lot of there were a few reports that the Steelers were right away going to slap the franchise tag on running back Le'Veon Bell. I don't understand why the major media guys, don't know that that's not the way that the Steelers work. Will the Steelers put the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell by March the 6th? Yeah, I think they will if they don't work out a long-term deal with him in the meantime. But to think that they were going to open up on February 20th and slap the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell was absolutely ludicrous. And I'm not surprised he doesn't have the tag right now. I'm a little bit maybe surprised based on the things, on the things that Le'Veon Bell said back at the Pro Bowl, how he thinks that maybe a deal will get worked out by the 20th. I guess a tad bit surprised maybe they haven't got a deal done, but I'm not shocked, and I won't be shocked if there's not a deal in place by March the 6th, and we could be talking about this like we did last year all off season along with Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, my stance, I've been pretty consistent with it. Bell's going to get the tag at least placed on him. I think both sides are going to work towards a long-term deal, but I think the chances of that happening aren't great. And you're right, you look at last year with Bell, he got tagged on actually a year ago today, February 27th, he got the tag. It was before the March 1st deadline. So I forget the exact date of the deadline this year. I'm sure you know, Dave, but I'm sure they'll do that right before the deadline hits.
Yeah, March 6th. So we have a week from, what is it, today or tomorrow? Let me pull my calendar up here.
Yeah, about a week.
A week from today. I don't think it's going to happen today. I think if they get to the week, when they get to the weekend here, obviously Kevin Colbert and company are going to be in Indianapolis for the combine. So, if they don't think a deal is going to get done by the time, they head out of town, which, well, really, they're heading out of town now because Kevin Colbert is supposed to talk at the combine on Wednesday. So maybe it does happen any day now. And my thoughts on the matter is, look, I would like to see them sign Le'Veon Bell to a long-term deal, one that's a good deal for both sides. Obviously, I think Le'Veon Bell, I would cap his value at around $15 million a season. Even then, you'd be pulling teeth for me to agree to that. My biggest fear, and I've written and talked about this on the podcast as well, is just locking him up with so much guaranteed money that it makes him hard to cut over the course of the first three years here. I find it hard to believe that he's going to get a signing bonus, more than what Antonio Brown got just right out a year ago. That was like $19 million. Antonio virtually was guaranteed only. I shouldn't say only. He was guaranteed almost $20 million as part of that deal. And really, you know, there were injury guarantees obviously built in beyond that. But that was it. And I just cannot see, you know, I will be shocked if Le'Veon Bell, you know, approaches, you know, year one guarantees that Antonio Brown got. You know, if it was up to me, and you know, if Le'Veon Bell and his agent were hard, you know, sticking hard to, let's say, a $17 million per year, or six, you know, even 16, I don't know, 16 might be, I might could be coerced into that. But if they, you know, they're a hard sell, just leave the franchise tag on him, let him play one more year, and then let him walk after that. Because I got to be honest with you, Alex, like I said, my biggest fear with Le'Veon Bell is just this. The workload that he's had so far during his career, and the kind of runner that he is, you know, I find it hard to believe that he's going to be able to touch the football 400 more times this next coming season, and better the numbers that he had last season.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're all valid points, and I'm right there with it. You don't want another Lamar Woodley situation where you're sitting in dead money for too long and it really screws you up cap-wise. You know, my reality, and this is different than what I want to have, and my reality is that they were going to tag him for this year, and I said this last year, they were going to tag him for 2018 to let him go after 2018 because they just ran out of leverage, ran out of time. My whole reason for why I don't think a long-term deal is going to get done is a simple question of what changed from last year. You know, the Steelers made a competitive offer last year. Bell didn't take it, which is fine. I don't begrudge him for it the way that maybe some fans do. But what's different? You know, Bell had another successful season. He wants the same amount he does last year. He's already confirmed, and I forget what interview it was, that he would not accept the Steelers' offer from last year or this year. So he's already above. You know, Steelers are going to have to go up to get him. And I don't see any reason why the Steelers are going to go up. What's going to make them pay more this year than last year? I mean, the situation is the same across the board. So I'm sure they're going to work earnestly. The good thing about the combine is that aside from draft stuff, it's a time where you start talking with agents and you start getting maybe the wheels churning on some of those things. So maybe that'll start creating some headway with the Steelers and Bell's agent. But I can't see them bridging that gap again this year.
Is he worth $15 million a season?
I mean, the biggest issue, and you know this a lot better than I do, of course, is just about the guaranteed money. Because I think on a yearly basis, yes, I would say that I would pay him that. But it's about the guaranteed, the structure, and, you know, the point that you bring up, which is the most valid point here, what happens in 3-4 years if he's not the same guy? Can you get out of that contract without, you know, again, like Woodley swimming in dead money? So the quick answer is yes, but I think it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, and, you know, look, I mean, is he a number one running back and a number two wide receiver combined? I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, a lot of his receptions are dump offs, but I mean, you got to be able to get yourself in that position and do something with the football in your hands after making a catch. And look, I mean, like it or not, you have to put some kind of value on his pass protection. I mean, he is probably without a doubt. I mean, you'll be hard pressed to name another running back that's as good in pass protection as he is, right?
Especially the workhorse guys. I mean, there's some niche guys that do it well, but yeah, of like the elite guys, he's right up there at the top.
Right. That's why I say, look, I mean, $15 million per. I mean, even that, you look at the guys underneath them, none of them are going to come close to him anytime soon. I mean, you know, he will have made, you know, if you, I mean, obviously, if the reports last year are true, that he would have earned $30 million over the first 2 years of the deal that he was offered and $42 million over the course of the first three were true, well, then the Steelers should have no problem paying him $15 million, you know, almost $15 million this year as part of a tag. And they actually get out the last, you know, that last year and this year cheaper than they would have, you know, had he signed that contract. But, you got to draw the line in the sand at some point. And I think it's $15 million per. And once again, the guaranteed money is what scares. Look, I want this guy in a Steelers uniform in 2018. I don't think there's hardly anybody listening to this podcast that don't want that. My biggest fear, and I guess it's just from tracking the team financially for all these years, salary cap and all like that, is just I worry about the way, you know, he's going to want this contract structured. And like you said, what's going to change between this year and last year? And really, David Todd's been kind of screaming the same thing when we've talked about the same subject there, and really not much. I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, if you can sign him to a deal that makes him easy to cut after the 2019 season, go ahead and get the deal done. But, I mean, if it requires, you know, 35, 40 million or whatever you'll want to come up with these obscene numbers you see people trying to throw around, no way in heck will I want that, because I'm just fearful that this workload is going to take the toll on him. And I'm going to go on record right now. I will be surprised if he does not miss a game or two in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always good odds of that, playing the position that he does. But, you know, last thing I'll say on Bell is that, you know, again, I'm with you that, you know, the numbers have to be right, but I want him back. And for all the reasons we talked about, and I know that statistically his numbers may have dipped last year, I think there's some, you know, below the surface reasons for that. But again, I look at a guy that plays 90% of the time. You talk about guys that don't do that, he's the only one in the league that plays 90% of the time as the first back since, I think, Matt Forte in 2014 to play 90% of his team snaps in a year. And that you can't replace. And so we talk about it, you know, people that don't want to tag Bell or think it's okay, they can live without him. Well, you got to replace, you know, basically 1,000 snaps. And can you do that effectively and at that level? Probably not. So, you know, tagging Bell is a no-brainer decision. And I want to get him to a long-term deal. I just think logistically and financially that's going to be a difficult task.
And the thing is, too, if you're paying him $15 million per, you're not going to diminish his workload, are you?
No. I saw Bouchette talking about that, like, you know, get him less carries. I'm like, dude, you're paying him $15 million. That's not the time to start lightening the load on him.
No, not at all. You want to get your money worth, money's worth out of him, that's for sure. All right, we're done beating that horse for today. Martavis Bryant was back in the news, well, kind of not on his own doing, kind of a speculation. And everything that runs along with that. Oh, look, you know my stance on Martavis Bryant all along, and I've said this for a while now. If he's with the Steelers in 2018, it's going to be his last season. He's going to be gone after 2018. Now, will the Steelers trade him, you know, around draft time? I wrote about that before I got out of town, I guess, a week or 2 weeks. I forget when I wrote about it. But the only way, you know, as far as a move-up kind of trade packaging Martavis Bryant to move up in the draft, I just don't see that happening. If you're going to move Martavis Bryant, it's going to happen a lot along the same lines, I think, that we saw San Antonio Holmes move several years ago. The Steelers basically gave him away for a ham sandwich to the Jets for like a fifth round draft pick, and you know, that's because they knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign Santonio Holmes after the season ended, and he was also facing a four-game suspension at that time, so they decided to just go ahead and cut bait then. Now, you know, with what Martavis Bryant did last year, the fact that Juju's passed him on the depth chart, the fact that it's really hard to imagine Martavis Bryant playing more than 65% of the snaps in 2018. Are the Steelers running a risk of seeing him complain again? you know, and being kind of the vocal bad teammate that he was prior to the deadline? Or do they think they have that solved now, and do they think they can get another 50 to 60 catches out of him for, you know, maybe close to 1,000 yards and 8, 9, 10 touchdowns, something along those lines? They're not, in my opinion, because of him being entering the final year of his contract, the fact that he wants to get paid big time, the fact that he's got the strikes against him that he does, I just cannot see another team giving anything more than a fourth round pick at most for him, and realistically probably a fifth round pick at the most, because you got to remember, a team's going to give up that draft pick for him has no guarantee that they're going to be able to sign him. Once he becomes their property, Martavis Bryant essentially kind of owns all the leverage at that point, you know, especially if he wants to bet on himself to stay clean and that he can have a 70 or 80 catch season. He's going to want to probably bet on himself. So I you know, at this point, unless the Steelers just dealt him away for a, you know, a fourth or fifth round draft pick a few days before the draft or during the draft, honestly, it's in the Steelers' best interest, I think, to keep him, hope he keeps his nose clean, hope he has another 50, 60 reception season, yada, yada, and he walks off via free agency next offseason and for a high money, and you end up getting a third-round compensatory draft pick for him.
Yeah, no, you summed it up really well, Dave. I don't have a whole lot to add there about that. I'd rather keep Bryant and get a year of production from him and try to get to the Super Bowl than trade for a fifth, sixth round pick and, you know, potentially get essentially nothing in return. But let me just ask you this, Dave. What would be the minimum you would need in a hypothetical trade to deal Martavis Bryant?
Man,
For me, it would be a third round pick.
Yeah, I would tend to go that way, because even though, you know, look, fourth round on are really such crapshoots, you know, and I know the Steelers have had great success with drafting wide receivers, but there's no guarantee of what guy that you're going to get. You know, people just think that it's easy to trade and to zero in on, you know, that's why I wrote, you know, not long ago about the inside linebacker position this offseason and how I expect the Steelers, Kevin Colbert, to go get a kind of a guy that can start at a modest price during the offseason here, just because there's no guarantee what you're going to get in the draft. So why not go with a kind of a known commodity and a kind of a fallback option? And I kind of view it the same thing with Martavis. Unless I could get a third round pick for him, I don't think I'm going to deal him. I just hope that he accepts his role with the team in 2018. I mean, he is a guy that, I mean, he, you know, 65% of the snaps is fine, a fine plan for him. He's a guy that can still stretch the field, you know, a guy that can put up 8, 9, 10 touchdowns for you, and then, you know, go about his merry way after the 2018 season is over. So, yeah, no less than a third-round draft pick, and on the flip side, I just don't see the Steelers getting that from a team.
Yep, I'm with you. Again, I think it's been Bryant's last year, but the good thing is he came on strong at the end of last year. His head seemed on straight. He seemed more focused, more detail-oriented. The same effort was there that he showed earlier in the year. So, you know, you can get a really good year out of him, and like you said, hopefully get a high comp pick, and you know, that's the best-case scenario.
I mean, if everybody stays healthy, I mean, the ceiling on him snap-wise has to be like 70%, right?
Yeah, probably even less, because he might only be an 11 personnel kind of guy, because I think Juju's going to keep taking a lot of time there. So it could be in that 60 to 65 maybe percent range.
And that's you know, that's kind of where I've projected him as being as well. Okay, couple other things that came across last week that we need to cover. One of them being the compensatory draft picks. And if those of you listening remember, a few shows ago I told you why I did not think the Steelers were going to get a compensatory draft pick and why there was confusion or seemed to be confusion over the J.J. Wilcox situation. All of that was written by, was it Nick Corte, I think, from Over the Cap. Look, you know, You got to take your hat off and hand it to that guy. Really knows his stuff when it comes to that compensatory formula. I think he nailed all 32, did he not?
I think he got everything right. The order was just slightly off, but that's a minor gripe to try to figure out the comp stuff.
Right, exactly. So no compensatory picks for the Steelers this year. As I wrote, last week, that was to be expected. And I think the only other thing that we talked about prior to me leaving out of town, Bob Labriola had initially reported the trade with the Giants last year with Ross Cockrell was going to net a 6th-round draft pick this year. Bob ended up recanting that and saying that it's going to be a 7th-round pick. And that's what a lot of us originally thought it might be. So really, I don't think any of that's in stone yet. I think we'll get the official draft order all rounds from the league probably this next week. I think it usually happens right after the combine, but I think now most of the initial speculation was that the Steelers were going to get a 7th-round draft pick for Ross Cockrell, and I think that's what it's going to be when it comes to there. We are right in the middle of salary cap casualty season. There's already been several big names released by teams. It started, I think, a week and a half ago or so with Derek Johnson from the Chiefs getting let go. Of course, we had in Houston, the middle linebacker that was
Brian Cushing.
Right, Cushing was cut. We even saw a handful of names. The Panthers cut a couple of safety and a veteran defensive lineman, Charles Johnson. Yesterday, Pernell McPhee was cut by the Bears along with Quentin Dimps as well. Everybody gets excited anytime one of these big names hits the market during this time of the off season, and inevitably, I know you and I both get tweets from fans saying, "What about this guy and the Steelers?" It's so easy for us to say no to that because of the history of the team, and I wrote about this yesterday. Alex, is the Steelers really have no history when it comes to signing salary cap casualties from other teams prior to the start of free agency. I mean, they just don't participate in that thing. Now, there have been instances where a couple of their former players have been cut. William Gay is one that comes to mind. Antoine Randle-L is another one that comes to mind that were salary cap casualties at this time of year. And before the free agency period started, the Steelers had signed those guys back. But outside of that, the Steelers just do not participate in those kind of signings at this time of year before the start of the new league year starts. Now, the closest really thing that you can come to that would be what happened with D'Angelo Williams a few years ago. We knew D'Angelo Williams was going to be a salary cap casualty, but not in. We knew that before the start of the new league year, but we knew the Panthers were not going to officially cut him until after the start of the new league year because of salary cap purposes. In order to designate a player a June 1st cut, they have to be released after the start of the new league year. So that's what happened with, even though we all knew D'Angelo was going to get cut, they did not actually make the move until after that start of the new league year, and then the Steelers signed him to a contract a few days after that. You go back and you just look at the history of Kevin Colbert and street free agents as a whole, even after the start of the new league year. And by street free agents, I mean those that are not, unrestricted and those type guys that are literally on the street because they were cut by their former teams. There's not a large history when it comes to the Steelers with that as well. So to think that the Steelers are going to go after one of these guys, one of these higher profile guys right now, don't hold your breath.
Yeah, and I take it just even one step simpler and just say, don't even worry about the history. Just look at the talent that's out there. Kurt Coleman, Brian Cushing, McPhee. It's not huge names that are going to help you out in a good way. So I just look at that basis and say I'll pass on those guys.
And don't get me wrong, I'm for signing any kind of veteran player that might have a little bit of mileage left on him to a minimum 1 year contract. Okay, mm-hmm. Especially for the qualifying contract that comes with a decreased salary cap number. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Kevin Colbert keeps one taped to the front door of the Southside facility, for that matter. You know, just leave it out there to whom it may concern. If you want to sign this, go ahead and get it notarized and send it back to us. I'm joking, obviously, but that's the only kind of stuff, way I would, my hand could be twisted with several of these guys. There's a reason these teams are parting ways with these players. A lot of them, their production is not going to match what they're wanting to be earned, and really, quite honestly, a lot of them are really not even worth minimum salary, if you ask me. Now, will they find homes with other teams here in the coming weeks for more than minimum? Several of them will. But just as I noted, the Steelers' history when it comes to these type of players, outside of players that maybe have once played for them, is really slim to none. Sure, there's the Jericho Cotchery. Sure, there's the even look at Lance Moore. I mean, Lance Moore was cut by the Saints and signed very, very quickly as well too. But he didn't. Just look at the overall track record. I mean, yeah, there's a D'Angelo Williams type every once in a while, but when it comes to the Steelers, those type of players just normally don't pan out well. Now, with that said, free agency is on the way. We don't expect the Steelers to be overly busy. In fact, I would expect maybe a carbon copy, Alex, maybe of what we saw last year, where Tyson Alualu was kind of your high-priced guy and you had about two or three other kind of minor guys to fill in the holes. Do you agree with that? And you this past week you also posted your offensive and defensive kind of free agent wish list for the Steelers. Why don't you go over a few key names there?
Yeah, no, I think it'll be similar in terms of the free agent approach. Obviously, there's a bit more of a starting need this year, so you might see a little bigger splash. Maybe not quite at the Mike Mitchell and Darius Green value, but maybe slightly below that if you get the money right. We'll see what happens. But as for my list, they were posted yesterday, so you can check them out on Steelers Depot. I'll just go through the big names, especially defensively. I have basically three inside linebackers and two safeties that I think really fit well, that, provided that they're cost-effective, of course, are going to be fixed. I'll just run through them quickly. You can read the whole article. But Anthony Hitchens from Dallas is my number one guy. That's 25, good athlete. Wasn't always an every-down guy in Dallas because they have good linebacker talent, but was used out there when injury struck and things like that. He's a violent guy, physical playmaker. That I think can be the Mac linebacker from day one, and at least the one guy from over the cap, Jason, who's an expert on this stuff, thinks he's going to be worth about $4 million per year, which is great money for me. The second one's Avery Williamson, which the names have been talked about 100 times, the LeBeau system guy. I don't think he's quite the cover guy Hitchens is, but the sideline-to-sideline athleticism, I think, is pretty up there, so that would make a lot of sense as well. Then Josh Bynes from Arizona, a guy that I didn't know really anything about. He's 28, a little bit older, not quite the athlete as the other two either, but, did tremendous job filling in for Deion Buchanan in two games last year, so much so that the Cardinals carved out kind of a role for him even whenever they got healthy. So that's a really cheap signing. I think they can come in and be your favorite at the Mac linebacker spot. You create a little bit more competition there with a draft pick. But I think a guy that's been regarded as a good leader and communicator, and certainly things the Steelers need. At safety, Trey Boston, which, again, everyone knows about him. I think the money might be a little too much for him, but we'll see. The talent, I think, is there, and he had five interceptions last year, which is more than I think the Steelers safeties did combined, or I think it matches the five the Steelers safeties had. And then Keith Tandy from Tampa Bay, I think it's going to be a cheap option, has been a playmaker. You look at the end of 2016, he had, I think, four interceptions in five games. New Orleans game, he took over. I think he didn't even have a pick in that game, but had several breakups. And the Steelers brought him in for a visit in 2012, a West Virginia kid. Played quarterback in high school, played corner at WVU. Tampa Bay moving to safety, just got versatility. You know, we've seen the Steelers circle around those guys they bring in, whether that's B.W. Webb, Ladarius Green, the interest in Dont'a Hightower, they brought him in for a visit when he came out of Bama. So, you know, that's one thing I look towards when it comes to free agency is who are the guys the Steelers have brought in before in years past they still probably like now they get a chance to pick up.
Yeah, and refresh my memory. How did Anthony Hitchens come into the league? What pick was he?
He was, I think, a fourth rounder. He was a surprise fourth rounder. Most pegged him as a late round, seventh round kind of guy. Dallas took him, I guess, high, but I think it worked out for him.
I'm trying to remember what he was combine. I don't think it's combine.
He ran a 4.74. I forget the other numbers off the top of my head, but they weren't great. But I think he tests better than he plays better than he tests.
Right, right, and you know we see that a lot of times. He is the guy on your list that intrigued me. Now, of course, I went over a lot of inside linebacker free agent options for the Steelers, you know, several weeks ago when I wrote about you know expecting them to maybe address that position here during free agency. DeMario Davis from the Jets, obviously on that list. A few others, you know, as well that you didn't include on yours. I like Anthony Hitchens. I think he could obviously be had for very cheap as well. How surprised will you be if the Steelers don't address the inside linebacker position during the prior to the draft?
Not totally, because I think you have limited options out there, guys that really fit well. Remember, you're talking about replacing Shazier. You have to replace a guy that, you know, is going to play 1,000 snaps, going to be a third down guy, an all situations type player, and you just can't take anybody and put him there. That's why I reject the idea of bringing back Lawrence Timmons. A lot of talk about that. Dave, I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, but I don't see any reason, any role for Timmons to return, because he's not playing the Mac linebacker spot at 32 years old with diminishing cover skills. So, I think that's the move to make if you can get one of those guys. But if you can't get a guy that fits that to a T, you got to go through the draft.
I am a huge Lawrence Timmons fan. But with that said, I mean, definitely not an upgrade or even equal to what Ryan Shazier was offering this team. You know,
not even close.
Not even close. So. Look, I mean, is he a better backup option than say, a Tyler Matakavich? Yeah, I think so. But on the flip side, Lawrence Timmons is not going to go down there and cover punts and kickoffs for you either. on top of it, I would not be shocked if the Steelers did re-sign Lawrence Timmons back, assuming he is cut by the Miami Dolphins. But with that said, I don't think it's the right move. I think you're going in the wrong direction if you do so. Avery Williamson was a guy that I also had on my list a few weeks ago. He obviously, maybe not so obviously, but at least in my opinion, I think Williamson is one of the best fits as far as affordability goes. You know. Mm-hmm. And that's all due respect to you know your suggestion about Anthony Hitchens and all. I think Williamson is a guy that could get you through the first quarter of the season, help you, you know, kind of groom the guy that we think that they're going to take in either the first or second round, and a guy that once he does lose that position can probably still help you out on special teams, a guy that can be on the roster for a couple of years. So,
see, I'm going to disagree a little bit. I think Williamson is probably going to cost more than Hitchens, maybe not by a lot, but I think by a little. And for me personally, if I were to sign either Hitchens or Williamson, I probably am not drafting an inside linebacker in the top two rounds. Probably third, fourth, I might do something there, but I have that position set. I know a first or second rounder isn't going to find play time there, so I'm looking elsewhere if I'm doing that.
Okay, well, fair enough. You think Williamson's going to be in high demand? Who's going to be in higher demand, DeMario Davis?
Then Williamson?
Yeah.
No, Williamson will definitely be, I think, lean the market on this.
You think so? You think he's going to be...
Davis is, what, 29, 28 with 1 year starting, and it was a weird situation with the Jets, and Williamson's 25 and a better cover guy?
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And you think Hitchens going to be in more demand than a DeMario Davis?
I think so, yes. Because I think Davis is going to get a small contract. Hitchens, again, that over-the-cap guy, thinks around $4 million. I actually think it might be a little bit more than that, but we'll see. My concern with Hitchens is that Dallas wants him back, and I know the Colts are rumored to be in heavy pursuit of him. I think their defensive coordinator was his coach at Iowa or something, so he might end up in Indianapolis. So it just might be an availability thing with Hitchens.
All right, well, definitely, look, I mean, there is a list of about five or six guys I think that would fit. To be honest with you, and look, I mean, if these guys are $4 or $5 million per, the way the Steelers like to structure these contracts, I mean, that you could easily afford it salary cap wise, with these guys. I said it once, and I'll say it until it either happens or doesn't happen. I will be surprised if they don't sign a guy by the time the draft comes around, because I just don't think you can go into the draft with what you have now.
No, I mean, ideally you don't. Ideally you make a move, but, you know, I don't want to make a move for the sake of making a move. And to swing it back to Timmons, I think signing Timmons is making a move just to say you made a move. I mean, I could see it happening because we know the history of reunions in Pittsburgh. And, you know, the Steelers offered him a contract last year. They weren't completely turning their nose at him. He just went to Miami for more money. But what are you going to do with it? Are you going to start him at Shazier's spot? That's a bad idea. It's going to be the backup to Vince. And like you said, no special teams value. You know, they like Matakevich a lot. I don't think they're really crazy about adding a backup there. It's just no role for Timmons at all. So I'd be against the move.
So you think they go into the draft with exactly what they have now?
I think that, no, they could. I mean, you know, they definitely could get an inside linebacker. I just think you have to find the right guy. I think you have to find someone that can be your day one starter. And there's a limited list of those guys because the responsibilities at the MAC position is going to be so demanding. So I think, you know, you have to find a Hitchens or a Williamson or some upper athlete that can run and cover. And there's only a couple guys out there that's going to fit that bill. If you get them, that's great. But if not, you know, I'm not going to force it.
I like Trey Boston. Obviously, he's going to be on a lot of lists as well, too. But he's probably going to be the most sought-after safety this year in free agency. And,
yeah, sounds like it.
And, you know, it's usually hard for the Steelers to go after and pay that kind of, you know, top money and get into kind of a bidding war, if you will. I mean, it'd be a great fit. At least, you know, it looks like it on paper that he would be a great fit. But and look, I mean, the free safety list is not great, right?
Yeah, I had trouble finding names that really fit the free safety position. I thought Tandy was a good fit, you know, Boston. And again, with Boston, the Steelers brought him in last year. He said he had a good visit there. Now, the Steelers were not in the top two. It was the Chargers who he went to and the Bills. They were top two. But that's another reason to think the interest is still going to be there. But you're right. I think the one guy that might be out of their price range is going to be Trey Boston.
Yeah, I do as well, too. I would be less surprised if the Steelers didn't sign a safety prior to the draft than I would be if they didn't sign an inside linebacker prior to the draft. Okay,
I agree.
Offensive, you want to go over? What do the Steelers need offensively?
Yeah, just depth. I mean, it was not an exciting list I put up, but that's how free agency goes in Pittsburgh 9 times out of 10. Running back, you know, you want to look for that third down guy, possible return candidate. Benny Cunningham was a name that I think's always been attractive. He's got 53 catches on third down since 2014. That's one behind Le'Veon Bell and fifth overall in the NFL. So I think that's a good third down piece that can do kick return work for you. A couple receivers, you're looking for receiver depth both in the slot and in the return game. Bruce Ellington is a name that I really like. Kind of flamed out in San Francisco. Had a nice year last year in Houston before getting hurt. I think he's a guy that's your day one kick return, punt return, or backup slot position. And the Steelers brought him in for a visit when he came out of South Carolina several years ago. So again, I kind of look at that as a possibility. Michael Campanera from Baltimore, I don't like him as much as Ellington, but, you know, I think punt returner for sure, slot guy, gadget guy. Steelers know him pretty well. Campanera's had a couple of good games against him. And then tight end, you might get a depth guy. Throw out a Brandon Williams, you could throw out a Lee Smith or something like that. You know, that's fine. But, you know, I'm looking for primarily special teams help and depth at offense.
Boy, you know, the start, we're just a couple of weeks away from the start of free agency. It's kind of funny how this the off season, how the NFL calendar just really moves right along here. So, you know, look, I mean, we'll see what happens. Once again, you know, we don't expect the Steelers to be busy. Probably a repeat of something similar to last year. You know, obviously, it's not hard to circle the needs for this team. We already hit on an inside linebacker and safety on a defensive side of football. You could obviously see maybe a veteran, you know, nose tackle type maybe being addressed, but they're not going to sink a lot of money in that for obvious reasons. And look, if you get an edge rusher on a cheap, sort of a maybe a kind of a guy like an Arthur Motes was a couple of years ago, a guy that can help you on special teams and a guy that can give you a few snaps on the outside, maybe you go that route. But don't expect fireworks here over the course of the next couple weeks. All right, the NFL Combine. You and I are going to be busy starting pretty much on Wednesday on through almost a full week after that as the Underwear Olympics gets underway in Indianapolis. One of my favorite times of year here, and I know yours as well, Alex. You know, as far as the inside linebacker position goes, it's not hard now at this point to start naming the kind of the names that we're interested to see work out in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have some of the top guys in the first round. Rashawn Evans from Alabama, you know, we're going to see how he runs, and we'll see if the Steelers meet with him. You know, we know the history, if you know, not that it's the sale end all, but we know the history of Colbert never taking an Alabama player, you know, as running the Steelers. The last Bama guy to be taken was Deshae Townsend, I think, in, what, 98. So for whatever reason, that just hasn't been the case. Malik Jefferson from Texas I'm interested in. I think he's a good athlete. I think he's going to test well. Same with Darius Leonard from South Carolina State. Small school, obviously, is not where the Steelers usually go, but, you know, Jamon Hargrave went to South Carolina State, so whatever that's worth. Mike McCray, you know, I'm kind of up and down on him. We'll see how he tests. And then Shaquem Griffin, you know, from Florida, you know, obviously his story with just having one hand. I'm thinking he's going to test great. I think he'll have great numbers, and, you know, it'll be a good opportunity for NFL teams to sit down and talk to him and get to know him and his story.
We obviously don't expect a guy like Roquan Smith to be on the board when the Steelers pick, right?
Not even close.
But the Alabama kid, you know, there's probably a chance that Rashawn Evans falls down that far, maybe. Tremaine Edmonds. That's a guy. I think even Mike Mayock expects him to go off the board early. 6'5", 250, and what is he? 19 years old.
19. He won't turn 20 till right after the draft. I think it's a guy the Steelers would really love to have. I agree that he's not going to be there at 28, but you want to talk about, and it's early, but you want to talk about potential trade up candidates if he's sitting there around 20. That might be the guy.
And that's because we expect a kid out of Roquan Smith to be gone even before that,
yeah,
right?
He's like top 10 probably.
Right. I don't know much about his character, and I still would like to watch a little bit of Edmonds from an all 22 perspective. But really is an impressive specimen, if you will. Now another guy, and Mike Mayock talked about him during his conference call. Which, by the way, if you missed it, I have Mike Mayock, like I do for the latter half for the last 3 years. His full conference call with the media that took place on Monday. I have that up on the site at SteelersDepot.com. It was about a little more than, I think, than about hour 40 minutes, something like that. Always good to listen to. Go into it with an open mind. I thought some good questions were asked yesterday. He doesn't really get too much into team specific needs NFL wise, but he lets you know some of his initial thoughts on a lot of these players ahead of the combine. He talked about Leighton Vander Esch, the kid out of Boise State, who it's no secret why people are linking Vander Esch to the Steelers early in the process. Already some mock drafts, major media ones have him going to the Steelers in the first round, 28th overall. Mike Mayock even said during his conference call that he considers Vander Esch a good fit with the Steelers. I think the big, and Mike Mayock hit on this as well, I want to watch this kid move, not on the football field. You know, I'm interested to see how he tests in the 40, how his short shuttle time is, how his three cone time is, those kind of things, because he does move great on tape. And that realistically, that's the primary, you know, thing that you use for evaluation with these guys, or how they move on tape. He seems to flow around blocks fairly easy. The thing is do you really see him move sideline to sideline, extremely well, and it's going to be interesting to see how he tests. And here's the thing when it comes to him and the Steelers. And look, I know you can't put a lot of stock in this overall, but it's worth going over this every year. The Steelers love those what I like to call sparky players. You know, with the and spark obviously is you know a derivative formula of the combine numbers, and the Steelers like those uber athletic, 110 or higher spark rating kind of guys, especially when it comes to their first round draft picks. Additionally, the Steelers have a long history, at least under Kevin Colbert, of not drafting a first-round guy that did not play his college football at a Power 5 conference. Mm-hmm. And the only one that they've done that with is quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, and for obvious reasons there, if we play in the quarterback position. Those two things give you pause as to whether or not Vander Esch might wind up being the guy. Now, the first time that I initially looked at Vander Esch on tape, Alex, I thought second round, okay? Mm-hmm. How do you think he's going to test at the combine, and do you expect him to be one of those sparky players?
Yeah, that's kind of an unknown. I haven't seen him. I really haven't seen him much at all, to be honest, yet. So I know that you guys have, so I can't comment on it too well yet. But he's going to have to test well because, like you said, one, he has to kind of overcome, I don't know if you want to call it the stigma, but for lack of a better word, the stigma of playing in a smaller conference. Because, like you said, the history with Colbert runs deep, and that's not a coincidence. They love guys that play against top competition. That makes the evaluation easier to them. It's less of a projection, so you know, that's going to be a little tougher for him to do. And again, you go back to the needs of the position. It's not just an inside linebacker that you need. It's a Mac linebacker that you need. It's a guy to replace Shazier for an every situation guy. That means someone that has to be able to run with tight ends, even occasionally run with receivers, sideline to sideline, being able to close on the ball, being able to blitz, line up off the edge, stunt and twist, and, you know, the list goes on and on. So you need just that unique athlete that can come in and be capable of doing that. That's not going to limit you schematically one iota. So any linebacker is going to have to test really well, and he's no exception.
He's not going to be Ryan Shazier, measurement-wise.
No, and just to be clear, very few are going to be at that level, but you need a guy that's close, at least, to fill that role.
Right, and I don't think he's going to be close from a measurable standpoint.
Yeah, he might, yeah. What do you think he's going to run, 4.6? I think what Mayock said, 4.65 was his over-under?
Yeah, I think he'll probably hit 4.6. 4.62.
Yeah. Is that good enough for you?
Oh, man. I guess
it's 240. If he comes in at 240, that's not bad.
Yeah. Let's just say I'm interested to see what his spark number is, you know, and then I want to see how he moves in the 20, you know, in the short shuttle. And then I want to go back after that and then go watch some of his all-22.
Yeah. Do you have a spark threshold? I don't know if you've ever done that in the past, a study of where these guys need to hit, be under or above?
No, because there's such a limited – I mean, you can find – I mean, I know there's the Three Sigma site or whatever. I forget how far – you know, that would be worth doing here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Is kind of researching first-round picks, you know, not quarterbacks, as far as their athleticism and their spark numbers go.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'm curious.
You know, because, look, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from what I've seen already from Vander Esch, okay? Because he's especially that game against Oregon, as Mike Mayock pointed out, it's fun to watch him on tape. I just wonder if he's more of a second-round guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. No, I mean, that'll be the debate.
Now, here's the thing. Now, I think the last time you and I got on a podcast together, we were talking about the edge rusher out of Oklahoma. Refresh my memory.
I can't pronounce it unless I jump in. But Ogbonna Okunrah, however you pronounce it.
Yeah, and you know, yeah, we were wondering, okay, what is he? Well, obviously, since then, I went and looked at all of his sacks and studied the tape on him. He is an edge, okay? There is no doubt about it. He is an edge. He is not an inside linebacker candidate. And let me tell you, if you could get a kid like that in the third round, somewhere along those lines, and because of his measurables and all, I think he is a guy that's going to slip. Look, I mean, Carl Lawson is a great case study, right? for measurables and guys that come out of big power conferences that actually had some production. I think Carl Lawson is a great case study. I think sometimes these measurables on these kids, on these edge rushers, work against them, and I think that's what happened against Carl Lawson there, that moved him on down the board. You know, but even so, you know, what did he play? 40-something percent of the snaps with the Bengals, and he still led all rookies in sacks. And we saw him do some things like some long. We saw him do some impressive stuff as a pass rusher, stuff that we thought he would do based on his tape in Auburn, right?
Yeah, no, that was a great pick by Cincinnati. So you think Agua might fall that far? Might be a similar story.
I think he could be a guy that falls into the third round, possibly. I'm interested to watch him test and all. But boy, his sack tape is impressive.
Mm-hmm. See, I go in the other direction. I think that this is a guy that might work his way into first round conversation. Might be a possibility at 28. I think it's going to go. You know, I think he's going to test tremendously. I think he's going to test a lot better than Lawson. I think he's more explosive. I think he's a bendier guy. That was some of the issues with Lawson last year. So I go the other way on it.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say he's going to fall into the third round, but it, mm-hmm. as I sit here right now, I would not be surprised if that happened. He's definitely a guy that I want to see some of these measurables and see if it matches kind of the stuff that I saw. Now, I only looked at him mostly as a pass rush guy. You know, as far as his pass rush skills go, because I was going through and compiling all the sacks. So, you know, I got a lot to learn about him as far as an edge setter against the run and stuff like that, stuff that I'll go back and do after the combine is over. But, you know, look, if there's one thing I've answered about him the last time I talked to you is he is an edge guy. For sure. Now, another kid that I'm interested to watch is this Chinna Nwosu out of USC. Is he an edge or is he an inside guy?
I think he can be an edge. I think he has a skill set to do it. I think most teams are going to view him as a 4-3, probably Sam linebacker. And I talked to him at the combine, at the Senior Bowl, and asked him kind of where he was most comfortable. And he said he was most comfortable in a 4-3. Now, that doesn't mean he can't move, and I think he can. But I just think most teams are going to view him as a 4-3 off-ball guy. And that's obviously not going to be an ideal fit for Pittsburgh.
You don't how do you expect him to test compared to a guy like Vander Esch?
Well, again, I haven't seen enough of Vander Esch to really make a great comparison. I think he's going to test well. He's not a crazy athlete. I'm trying to remember because I watched him before I left for the Senior Bowl several weeks ago. I think he can bend. I think his three-cone time is going to be good. His 40 and his 10 split might be average to above average.
Okay, but definitely not first-round material for the Steelers.
No, I think you're looking second to third round if you go after him.
All right. Now, another guy I've done some homework already on is Jeff Holland. Well, actually, two guys. Marquise Haynes out of Ole Miss, a guy that kind of caught my eye during the Senior Bowl. Marquise Haynes, in my opinion, and you and I had a brief conversation about this after I watched the film on him. Right now, he looks like nothing more than kind of a situational pass rusher. Probably better, you know. You don't get to see a lot of him drop. You seem to think he probably might be best suited for a 3-4 team. I think both 4-3 team. You said 3-4 team. I think he best mm-hmm. suited for a 4-3 team. But I can see both teams having interest in him. But with that said, his sack tape is not overly impressive. His pressure tape is okay. In my opinion, not great against the run at all. Very limited dropping experience. He seems like a great kid. Obviously, getting the Chucky Mullins award at Ole Miss will speak a lot. Probably, though, a fourth, fifth round guy. Would you agree from what you've seen?
Yeah, in terms of the value and where he's going to go, I'm probably thinking early day three. Now, I think he'll have a good combine. I think he's a good athlete. He's going to post some really good numbers. He could be one of those sparky guys. But I agree that he's a very raw player. I think I don't see him as a 4-3 really player at all. I think he's going to be a 3-4 guy that's going to need to play in space. He's at his best when he gets to play clean and use his length and, you know, good punch to try to, you know, create space and separation. But he's raw, and you pointed that out really well. So, you know, that's a day three kind of guy.
Yeah, virtually no counters with him whatsoever. He tries to get those long arms, those arms of his into your chest, and that's it. You know, no pass rush game or plan, no counters really to speak of whatsoever. He tries to beat you off the ball, and that's it. Now, another guy that I really enjoyed watching this film on was Jeff Holland out of Auburn. This is a kid that I liked his sack tape. I liked his pressure tape. As well, he is a guy that he only ended up really being a 1 year starter at that Buck outside linebacker position for Auburn because he's playing behind Carl Lawson. This is a guy that has a martial arts kind of background, and it shows with his hand usage. He has some nice initial pass rush moves. He has some nice counters already when it comes to him. 6'2", 249 pounds pre-combine. A guy that was not asked to drop. So it's going to be interesting to watch him go through those drop drills that they do for those kind of tweener edge guys, if you will. But he is a guy that, you know, you could probably see still on the board third or fourth round, Alex, that, boy, if the Steelers want another edge guy to try to develop, I like him.
Yeah, no, you sold me on him. I think it makes a lot of sense. If you can go ahead and get some of the other quote-unquote bigger needs in the top end of the draft, I think Holland would be a great pick for him.
All right, let's hear about a few guys that you've broken down to kind of close out the show ahead of the combine. Maybe a safety or two, you know, just some fits with the Steelers maybe that you've already gone over so far.
Did we talk about Kaiser White on the podcast before from West Virginia? I forget.
I think we did the last time we were on, but I think I don't know if it was before or after you wrote him up.
Okay, but yeah, you know, I still don't know exactly what you're going to do with him, but, you know, I like Kaiser White. Cameron Kelly from San Diego State is a little Sean Davis-ish in terms of just his background, not necessarily, you know, his exact projection, but was a safety, move corner, probably going to go back to safety, good ball skills, give him some big interceptions in his career. That could be a fit there. I'm trying to give other safety types that are going to be great fits. And, you know, there's some guys that I like that just aren't going to be good fits for if you're looking for a true free safety. Like a Trayvon Henderson, I think, is a little more strong safety than he is free. Marcus Allen is definitely more strong safety than he is free. You have any names in mind, Dave?
How much of Minkah Fitzpatrick out of Alabama have you watched?
Not much, because I just don't expect him to be anywhere near 28.
I mean, you know, there. I think they have him listed actually as a safety at the combine. You know.
Yeah.
Do you expect him to play safety in the NFL?
Yeah, I think he'd be a versatile guy. They could play slot, could play safety. It just might depend on the need and the scheme of a team where you're going to play him.
Overall, when you look at this safety class, it's hard to. You see a lot of guys that fit better down in the box than you do deep center field, don't you?
Yeah, and I'm sure that's mostly the case. Now, you know, Deshaun Elliott from Texas, I know some people criticize his coverage. Maybe I need to go back and try to watch him a little bit closer about that, but I thought he did a pretty good job as a one-year starter, was an impact player, great sideline-to-sideline range. He's the guy that I really want to watch in some of those, you know, the W drill, just watch him flip his hips. He is a little tall, but he's a bigger guy, and he's still kind of raw, so I expect some of that. That's the guy that I've circled that I think is a great hitter, a sideline-to-sideline kind of cover guy. That I think could play in the free safety role. Now, people disagree with that. You know, I mean, I need to go back and watch him some, but I liked him a lot my first time through. And then Justin Reed from Stanford, I haven't watched him yet. He's next on my list, but I know he's one of the top guys, so I'm excited to check out Justin Reed. You know, the pedigree is obviously there.
Based on what you know about the talent list so far and where the Steelers pick in the first round, would you be surprised if they drafted a safety in the first round?
No, not at all. Obviously, you know, the value's there. There's nothing that – was there anything that tells you that they wouldn't do that?
Well, I mean, I'm just on where you think people are slotted right now. I mean, do you expect a guy like Ronnie Harrison to fall? And, A, would he fit that role? Or is he more – do you consider him more of a in-the-box type safety? Are you even pigeonholing in other words, are you opening up that they would take a safety even if he was – more suited to play in the box and more of a strong role? Are you open to that, I guess?
I think they could be open to it. I'm not really, because what do you do with Sean Davis? Are you going to move him again? I mean, I get that to an extent, strong safety, free safety are interchangeable in Pittsburgh, but also kind of not really, because the strong safety is such a box guy, and, you know, free safety never comes out into a box. I mean, you know the system, you know what the other guy's doing, but I just hate moving Sean Davis. They keep doing it to the guy, and I get that he's had some struggles, but I think part of those struggles stem from just being moved around every single year and not getting time to really learn his craft to one position. So, you know, Harrison could fit and maybe either. Could he be there? Again, it's early to say. I think it's certainly possible, but I would prefer a true free safety. It's like moving offensive linemen around. Don't move one guy to fix another problem, and then you got to bank on both guys being able to adjust and play well. I want to limit the number of variables I need to deal with and I need to bank on working. And I think moving Davis to free safety just creates another variable.
Right. And of all the talk that we've heard, that we've seen and actually contributed in ourselves on the podcast this offseason so far, you know, Sean Davis to me would be the least likely of all the guys that we've talked about moving to free safety, I would think. I could much easier see a guy like Brian Allen move, or a guy like even per se Cam Sutton move than I could Sean Davis. And besides, I mean, Sean Davis, I mean, how much free safety did he even play at Maryland? None, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was a lot. And, you know, while there's really no way to hide shoddy tackling, you know, do you want Davis in that free safety role where you have to count on him to make some of those big critical open field tackles? I don't know about that.
How open are you to a guy like Brian Allen or a guy like Cam Sutton moving?
I'm open to Allen, less so on Sutton, because I think Sutton's going to be the future, probably on the outside, maybe Hayden after 2018. So I can move Allen, but Sutton, I'd rather keep him. And really, I want Sutton to play that dime role this year anyway.
Right, and you think that's how you get him on the field in 2018. David Todd and I have been talking about that last couple of shows. That you would get him on the field in William Gay's role, right?
Yeah, I think that's really the only way you get him on the field. I don't know how else you do it if you don't do that.
Right, and that was kind of the point I'm making there. So the thing is, I mean, Brian Allen becomes a luxury even at that point there. So that, you know, that, and plus he didn't play much deep safety at Utah, but you know the way everything points to him being possibly the best candidate to move there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm cool with him being a corner. I mean, I'm open to either spot. You just got to make a decision now. You don't want to string this guy along for 2-3 years at corner and then say, okay, now we're going to move you to safety. So I think if you do it, you do it now. But yeah, given the lack of depth there, the depth chart of corner right now, I'm fine with him going to free safety.
Okay, now going back to my original thing, talking about these draftable safety types. I mean, how many can you circle that are first round quality that could potentially play the free safety spot?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Dave. The list might not be super long. I mean, I like Elliott. I think if he runs well, he can move up into that first round conversation. Now, a lot of people might disagree with me on that, but I think as a junior with 1 year of starting experience, Talib didn't really know about him. So if he does well, that's going to move him up. Harrison from Bama, maybe. Kaiser White, that's too high. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a shallow list.
I mean, that's where I'm kind of going with wondering if safety would be being surprised if safety was a first round pick because of the two or three guys that you would probably like or might be off the board. By then, Derwin James, you know, for example. I mean, yeah. And even some will probably say he might be. I mean, he can play in a box too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but you know, we planet theory walking around with Derwin James. I think he's going to test real well at the combine as well. Wide receivers, you've already hit on a few. The kid out of Missouri being one of them.
Yeah, Jamon Moore. They met with him at the Senior Bowl. Could they go receiver a little bit higher than people think? I think it's possible. I think that you could look at another third, fourth round pick or receiver. I know people might not get on board with that. I don't have a whole lot of names that fit well, but look for the sparky guys, you know, the height, weight, speed types. That's what the Steelers almost always go after, with the exception of, you know, Juju.
You know, that Jester Wea out of Pitt, I'm looking forward to watching him work out at the combine too, because he seems like a maybe, I don't know, fourth, fifth, sixth round guy that, you know, you could you could make him a student for 1 year, and maybe he's your stretch to field guy. You know, after that, and I think he's kind of physical enough too. At 6'3", 210, he better be able to play some special teams.
Yeah.
You know, and I think look, I will be shocked if they take a wide receiver in the first three rounds. Definitely first two rounds. I'll probably be surprised first three, but anytime forward from that, because of what I expect to happen with Martavis Bryant after the 2018 season, I think it's on. I think you can find a height, weight, speed guy from round four on that you like and can stretch the field.
I think that conversation starts third round. I mean, obviously it depends on kind of how things go, but they could start third round, and because you're right, you got to replace Bryant next year. That's almost a given at this point. I like Cedric Wilson Jr. You know, Boise State. That's a guy that can fly, big playmaker. He's probably going to run pretty well. I think that's a guy that should kind of work set as that Martavis Bryant.
All right. Any other guys you kind of looking forward to? I mean, I know you and I, you're a little bit heavier into this draft class than I am, or actually a lot more heavier right now. I really plan on making up some time here in the next 2 weeks on several of these guys. Who are you going to be profiling on the site next?
Let's see. I had MJ Stewart go up today. A kid that's probably not going to fit the Steelers' needs, but I like a lot. I have Justin Reed on my list next. I got to get back into some of the draft stuff, too. I took like a week off to do the free agency kind of wish list, so I got to kind of get back into that heavy. The tight end group, though, it's a really good group. Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State got injured 20 minutes in the first practice of the Senior Bowl. He's going to be at the combine. I believe he's going to be working out, so I'm excited to see him. Gesicki from Penn State. Fumagalli from Wisconsin. Mark Andrews. Remember, we talked about Mark Andrews a lot early in this process. Haven't heard from him really since. I haven't watched him very much except for that beginning kind of talk about him. So let's check him out. And Durham Smythe is kind of one of my super sleepers I would love to get in the fifth round for Pittsburgh.
Any defensive linemen, potential kind of late round guys that you think the Steelers might have some interest in?
I really haven't done a whole lot of D-line work. A couple of the LSU guys, I forget their names right now. But, you know, you could see that, you know, that nose tackle type. I mean, is that what you're looking for, Dave, if you're looking for defensive line?
Well,
yeah,
looking for a guy to back up, you know, obviously Daniel McCullers. I don't think either of us expect Daniel McCullers to be retained. So, yeah, I know they have LT Walton, but you know, is LT Walton more of an end, or can, or are you comfortable with him being the number two behind Javon Hargrave? It just seems like it'd be a perfect opportunity to kind of address a bigger kind of nose tackle this time around.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I brought up the question about specifying, because you know Walton can kind of play anything, so you could, in theory, get a defensive end, a five tech, and be comfortable with Walton as your backup nose tackle, but. Yeah, you know, did I just see his name? No, I don't remember who the LSU guy is, but LSU guy, look him up.
Oh, I think I know the guy you're talking about. Is it, it's not Arden Key. No, he's light.
It's Greg something.
Okay, is he going to be at the combine or no?
I'm actually not sure if he is. No, he's not. Greg Gilmore. I was looking at him. He's apparently not going to be at the combine. So just disregard everything I'm saying right now.
All right. What about the kid that I had that we broke down on the site just recently out of I'm trying to remember. Was it PJ Hill? Trying to remember the name of that damn kid real quick. That out of Sam Houston State. You know the one.
Yeah, PJ Hall, I think.
Yeah. I think Hall is his last name there. Guy that just looking really quickly over his highlight. And there's not a lot of Sam Houston tape running around, unfortunately, but a guy that looked intriguing. You don't expect the Steelers to address the quarterback position, right?
I will throw my computer out my window if they do anything at quarterback. There's no need to this year.
What about the running back position?
In the draft or free agency or
both? Yeah. Draft
potential, you know, I would look for a third down guy. They got to fill these return spots, though. You know, Dave, I mean, they're so thin at return, and they lose Eli Rogers. I mean, he's making progress, but we don't know what his situation is going to be. They got to get Danny Smith some help over here. Get my guy a couple of names. So if you're looking for a receiver, looking for running back, I'm looking for guys that's going to help you out in a return game.
All right. We're about an hour plus into this, so I guess it's a great time to end it. You'll probably be with me more and more as the offseason progresses. Obviously, on Friday, I think David Todd might be back with me there. We'll be right in the middle of the combine at that point. And then obviously on Tuesday, I think the combine – I think that's the final. I think that's the final day when a defensive backs run on Tuesday there as well too. But from here on out, you'll probably be joining me more and more. Obviously, if you want to read up on all the draft profiles, we try to get about two or three of those out a day during the week there. You can catch those, and in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow Alex Cazor on Twitter at Alex _ Cazor. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And we hope to have a, Alex and I hope to have a pretty significant announcement about the site here in the coming weeks as well, too. Him and I have been working on something that will kind of keep a secret until we're ready to announce it here, maybe after the combine is over. So in the meantime, one of us, either Alex or I will be back with either Alex or David Todd on Friday. And in the meantime, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.